Big show for you here today. It is the conference championship preview. Joel Smith joins me to break down Patriots at Broncos and Rams at Seahawks. Two huge games. We've got a ton of matchups for you guys to dig into. We've got some props, bunch of notes. You're going to be as prepared as you possibly could be for those two games. A lot of trench talk in this show. How can you not love that? Then we finish it up with a little look ahead at Joel's top five free agents and their potential landing spots. All that and more cut up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. It is the championship round. I think I just tweeted the show out and I said the divisional round. I'm clearly living in the past. It's the championship round, conference championship, baby. And joining me to preview those games and talk a little ball, it is our guy, Joel Smith. Joel, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, how you doing? Good over here. Excited for this weekend of football. It's been a couple good ones now. So hopefully championship preview, same as the last two.
No doubt. And we're going to do that here. That's what we're going to be. Most of the show, we're going to be previewing the conference championship games. We're going to preview AFC title game, the NFC title game. We're also going to take a look at Joel's top five upcoming free agency candidates here, which is going to be really exciting to talk about because I'm just, listen, I love football. I love the real games. The real games are better than the offseason. But let's be honest, offseason content is very exciting as well. And we're kind of juggling both right now as the games sort of get here towards the end. So we're going to preview the games. It's going to be a big show. We're going to get to the free agents. Before we get to that, though, we have to look back at our prop record from last week, Joel. And once again, it was a little bit of a slower week for you. You didn't go quite 9-1, but you did best me once again. You were 5-4. I was 3-5. So you now sit on a 74% hit rate here. I'm at 47%. I'm sub 500. Not great. I'm not going to quite tank here on the final episode, tank for the number one pick, but you are definitely doing pretty strong here, my guy.
Been trying my best. I have some fun ones today. Don't know if they'll be accurate, but entertaining props at least. I was annoyed at a couple of them last week, like CMC with his injury, that sort of stuff, but still, 14-5, that's a good start after the first week.
Oh, dude, I was so annoyed at some of mine. Let me just allow me 2 seconds here to be annoyed about this. The CJ Stroud under yards, I mean, come on. I was right about he was going to struggle in that game. Give me a break. The one that really irritated me, though, and I kind of forgot about this, I had the over Brandon Cook's 2.5 receptions at plus odds, and obviously the infamous not catch interception in overtime. I completely forgot about that prop until I went back and looked at it. I was like, wow, forget about the Bills or Brandon Cooks getting screwed. I got screwed on that. I mean, the real loser here, the most important person that got banged on that Brandon Cooks reception was me, Joel.
Then you would have been over 500. Life would be good, better than it is now.
Unbelievable. Well, they say it is a game of inches and it swings on one play. And that's how it was for me this past week. But we will try to pick it up here and get some good props in as we preview these two games. But let's get started with the AFC Conference Championship here. We've got New England Patriots, 4.5-point favorites going into Denver to take on the Broncos. The over-under is 41.5 points in this game. Let's start with, usually I'd start with the visiting team, but let's actually start with when the Broncos have the ball here, Joel, because I think the biggest story in the game, and there's a lot of really interesting storylines and matchups to break down, but the biggest story in the game has to be that Denver's in the conference championship game, and they have to start their backup quarterback, Jarrett Stidham, who you said, this is a real quote from our guy, Joel, before the show got started, I'm excited to talk about Jarrett Stidham. So you're excited, pal. I'm going to let you cook here. What do you got on Stidham?
I am excited to talk about Jarrett Stidham. I think the first thing, you say the Patriots are 4.5-point favorites. If you were to put most of these teams against each other and say they have to play their backup quarterback, most would be worse than that. So I would say there's some confidence there, and there's reasons for it. With Stidham, fits well into Sean Payton's system. Hasn't played any regular season game, but at least got some of that preseason work. I don't think the offense is going to change too much. And I think Stidham will actually have a lot on his plate in this game. And it's kind of what Sean Payton does. Like, this offense is very unique. Bo Nix led the NFL in passing attempts this year. It is very much like they take their home run shots, but it's a lot of those short throws, passing attempts, screens, whatever it is, that Stidham can kind of step into and maybe not be one-to-one to Bo Nix, but there is a true shot at a ceiling. Really good defense that he's going in the passing game, especially in this back half of the year. But Stidham, the ceiling potential really interests me.
Yeah, I think Stidham, again, very fascinating player for a backup quarterback here, because two of the best offensive minds of the last decade plus here in the NFL really like this guy. Both of them will be involved in this game. Jarrett Stidham was drafted by the New England Patriots when Josh McDaniels was the offensive coordinator. Josh McDaniels then goes to Las Vegas and trades for Jarrett Stidham, brings him in there. He gets two starts at the end of his first season there because they benched Derek Carr, as we'll all remember. They benched Derek Carr for the injury guarantees, and Stidham had two pretty solid games, especially his first start. His first start in the NFL might have been his best, right? Where he had three touchdowns against a pretty good Niners defense in that season. Now, they had Davante Adams in that 2022 Raiders season. They're not quite going to have a guy at Davante Adams level in this particular Denver Broncos offense. But again, then Josh McDaniels gets fired from the Raiders. Stidham moves on, and Sean Payton recruits him. First day of free agency, Joel, Jarrett Stidham signs with the Denver Broncos, and then he gets an extension by the Denver Broncos to stick around there. And Sean Payton's really excited about him. So Josh McDaniels, who's obviously back as the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, he likes Stidham, called him a smart, accurate quarterback, called him a great human being, hard worker, great teammate, all of those things. And he said he just hasn't had an opportunity based on the situation. But he's had some, like, we've seen him in some moments. He was also, I don't know how much value you put in this, but he was awesome this preseason as well. So yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm interested to see what he looks like in this offense. And I think there might be some changes schematically in the offense. Like, I don't think Stidham probably has Bo Nix's athleticism, like some of the rollouts and stuff like that. But I do think that he can keep the train on the tracks here, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. I think it's interesting. You note the contract. I love that just because he hasn't had those regular season games where he stepped in and looked good and they're like, oh, we got to bring this guy back. But we go back to 2022. You mentioned that first ever start that he had, 365 passing yards. So that's why I say there's a ceiling here. He had 365 yards, three touchdowns, 34 more on the ground. So he averages 270 in his four starts. Obviously, that's weighted by that 365, but still, 219. Is the lowest he's had. So 219 in all four games in terms of his passing yards. Has a touchdown in each of them, 92 rushing yards on top of that. So in this offense, I have some hope here. I'm actually more worried about the run game. I don't know if we want to get into that yet, but run game, just as much as having a backup quarterback, has been not as great recently, especially when we're talking against New England's defense.
Yeah, let's get into that run game here, because I know you've got some notes on it. I've got some notes on it as well. So hit me with what you got on the Broncos run game.
Mainly just Sean Payton kind of gets out of it really quick. So I'm really interested with Stidham, like, how much do they want to establish the run and with who at this point? Like, R.J. Harvey didn't have many carries last week. He had, I think, six carries and he led the team. And that's kind of what it's been against New England. Where that's more I'm worried on that side is since Milton Williams came back. I know you've been talking about on the screen right now. I had a lot of stats in fantasy season on this when he came back, or when he was missing kind of those big key games at the end of the year. In terms of EPA per run, in the games with Williams this year, they are tied for second. Without him, 29th. In these last two games, they've obviously had him. The Chargers running backs, 12 carries for 30 yards. The Houston running backs, 18 carries for 31 yards. So not much volume, both at 30 yards. And Denver last week only had 10 carries to the running backs.
Yeah, it's a strength-on-strength matchup, too, if you think about the Broncos' offensive line versus this Patriots' defensive line with Milton Williams. You know, you mentioned some of the EPA stats, just basic yards per carry, as we're showing on the screen right now, 3.5 yards per carry with Milton Williams in 14 games, without him in 5 games, 5 yards per carry, 8 touchdowns on the ground to 3 when he is on the field. He's been a great signing for them, and you know, he's the guy that you kind of had some wonders about. Was he going to be that random Super Bowl, you know, kind of hero who gets boosted up and maybe artificially inflated? Then the Panthers and the Patriots get into this big bidding war for Milton Williams, but he's ended up being a great Free agency signing here for the New England Patriots, a big difference maker for them. His presence has definitely been felt in the playoffs. And again, it's the strength on strength matchup here, because that Broncos offensive line has been one of the best units in the NFL this season. They're here because in part of how good that offensive line is. And I think that's obviously good for Jarrett Stidham. But I just wonder what the trickle down effect will be for the running backs here, because I don't know where you're at with RJ Harvey. I just think he hasn't quite looked the part of a feature back so far. They might get J.K. Dobbins back in this game. But, you know, even if he comes back, like, how in shape is he going to be? How ready is he going to be to handle a full workload? I'm pretty concerned about this Broncos run game, even though they have this awesome offensive line.
Yeah, I would say in terms of RJ Harvey specifically, I would agree with that. There was a couple games in the regular season after Dobbins' injury where he kind of was that bell cow. And now that we've gotten in the playoffs, that first game at least, it didn't fully feel like that. He was running the routes out of the running backs, which they have some good receiving backs, other options there. But McLaughlin got the first carry on the first drive the other day, and I was kind of like, dang, like RJ Harvey's not even getting the first carry of the game. Yeah. So he's still going to be that number one guy, especially in the receiving game, it looks like. But it doesn't seem like he's going to be, you know, taking 75 to 80% of the touches like it looked like in the regular season.
Yeah, I wonder, he's going to be a really fascinating player to talk about in fantasy drafts next year. And, you know, if he has a big game or something, that will be part of the variable here with RJ Harvey. But let's talk about a little bit of the wide receivers for the Denver Broncos against this Patriots defense, because obviously they're going to have Jarrett Stidham throwing the ball, not Bo Nix. So any of the stats that we have here is not really going to be super instructive necessarily, but we're going to try to get in the ballpark here. The big thing to note with these Broncos wide receivers, Joel, is that I'm guessing Pat Bryant doesn't play in this game. It's his second concussion recently. I'm also guessing that Troy Franklin doesn't play in this game because he kind of tweaked his hamstring, I believe, last week. So it's probably going to be a three receiver set, you would guess, of Courtland Sutton at X, Marvin Mims as the Z kind of move around guy, and then Lil Jordan Humphrey as the big slot here potentially.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Marvin Mims played a decent amount. In the regular season, we saw Pat Bryant get more and more and more work. But then when he missed a game or two because of injury, Troy Franklin got his work back. Like, he was getting stolen from Bryant, was getting less and less playing time. But that bumped right back up when Bryant misses. With both of them out, then Marvin Mims ended up stepping in and having, you know, 75% of the snaps about that. So with him and little Jordan Humphrey, they'll definitely have to step up for Stidham, because if they just kind of have Sutton on Gonzalez a lot, or Gonzalez, you know, traveling with Sutton, someone else has to come to play.
No doubt. And I think when we look at this Patriots defense, they're not as man coverage heavy as some of the Patriots defenses of old, but they're 12th in man coverage rate on the season, and they actually give up a good point, like fantasy points per drop back. They're rather high in terms of that when you look at man coverage according to fantasy points data. And our Patriots corners are good in man coverage, especially Christian Gonzalez. Carlton Davis is on the injury report with a concussion. That is something to note, because we saw last week when any of the Bills had to sub out their cornerbacks or secondary players on the back end, Sean Payton immediately went after those guys, specifically with Marvin Mims. Like, the speed advantage was very apparent. So that will be interesting to watch if they do have a backup cornerback and replacement on the outside with Carlton Davis. Keep in mind that might be a guy that Mims could go one-on-one with. Of course, Sutton could eventually get one-on-one with, but I do think we'll see a lot of Christian Gonzalez specifically on Courtland Sutton. And when we look at just yards per route versus man coverage, Courtland Sutton is 14th among wide receivers this season in yards per route run versus man coverage, 2.59. Marvin Mims, on a small sample of only 45 routes, is 6th at 3.13. Against zone coverage, Courtland Sutton is 44th out of qualifying receivers. Marvin Mims is 83rd in yards per out run versus zone coverage. So really fascinating to see if the Patriots maybe break tendency here and play more zone, considering that's kind of what's flummoxed this passing game over the course of the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked, and I wouldn't be shocked if they kind of mix some things up in general with Stidham coming in, give him different disguise looks, that sort of thing. Something new that Stidham, they haven't seen him play before. Stidham also, maybe they switch it up on him as well. Give him a little bit different to look at. And you bring up targeting those outside corners. I just want to say I was so sad when Tre'Davious White missed that one snap and they immediately scored a touchdown to basically win the game.
On
that throw. Oh, broke my heart. I don't know if that's going to happen with Sutton. I would be shocked, but I would expect a lot of Gonzalez on Sutton this week, which does scare me for that matchup in general, just with how Gonzalez has played this year, but also to some of the games we've seen from Sutton disappearing in some of these matchups.
And I think we've talked about that, you and I, over the course of the season, like why that happens is because Courtland Sutton plays almost exclusively outside X receiver for this team. And that is why, like, again, Bo Nix being erratic sometimes, it'll just kind of get Sutton scripted out of games. It's a backup quarterback, obviously a guy in Jarrett Stidham who could be a little bit erratic here, but it is worth noting at least that 21% snaps in the slot last week for Courtland Sutton. I'm still guessing that he'd end up getting shadowed by Christian Gonzalez if he kicks into the slot sometimes. But remember, we saw that Bucks game, the one game that Emeka Ibuka had outside of the first 5 weeks that was a big, strong fantasy performance was against these Patriots. He had like 13 targets and six catches, I think. But all of those big catches came when they moved him into the slot. So you wonder if you see Courtland Sutton be able to move into the slot a little bit, get a size mismatch with a guy like Marcus Jones in there, but I'll mention that a little bit later when we get to some of our props as well. But let's flip it to the other side here. When the Patriots have the ball, what are you looking at when the Patriots are on offense here?
It'll be interesting to see if Trayvon Henderson can kind of have, like, not a breakout day, you know, but he's had a couple, not the greatest. He's not doing too much in the playoffs so far. No. In these first two games,
he's not played well, period, even. I think.
Yeah, it's been bad. It hasn't been good. So this Broncos defense, obviously really good. The main matchup I'm actually watching is just going to be on the offensive line. Will Campbell, last couple games, his playoff run as a rookie, same with Henderson, hasn't been too great. He only had two pressures allowed in the last three regular season games. He was kind of playing his best ball at the end of the season. And then we get to the playoffs, and he's allowed 9 pressures in these last two games. His PFF grade, for how much you believe in it, 16.5 last week against the Texans. His previous low was 48.5. One of those where it's like, when it's that low, obviously it's something. In terms of, he did not play his best game against the Texans last week. And obviously they're an incredible defense. They got Will Anderson on the outside, and now he's going to have to deal with Bonino on the outside as well.
And man, that's going to be another really tough matchup here for Will Campbell. I had some notes on this as well. I saw James Palmer from The Athletic posted that the fastest pass rush get offs in the NFL this season. Number one is Myles Garrett. Number two is Nick Benito. Number three is Max Crosby. Number four is Jonathan Cooper, who plays for these Broncos. And number five is Aiden Hutchinson. And that's two Broncos in the top five. And that's measured by Next Gen Stats. It's just, again, the speed that they get off the ball with. And you feel that when you watch Nick Benito. You know, he can get just rifle across the line of scrimmage. We've obviously seen Myles Garrett be able to do that. That's just going to be a handful for Will Campbell, because that was some of the stuff that we saw last week with Will Anderson. It's almost like, I get it. This is Will Campbell's job. He's got to block some of the best edge rushers in the NFL. But Drake May, you want him to get the ball out quick, but damn, he's got no time to do it because Will Anderson's getting off the ball so fast. So I'm definitely really concerned about that matchup potentially ruining the entire, you know, Patriots passing game, because it's just been a struggle here for the rookie left tackle.
Yeah, and May already scrambles a bunch, so you wonder how much that comes into play here. He scrambles at the highest rate in the NFL, hasn't really slowed down, and Broncos run a lot of man coverage as well. So when he's going up against that, maybe a little bit more. But can Benito track him down, that sort of thing, contain him? How are they going to be able to contain Drake May if they do get pressure on him, if he's running a lot? So that'll be interesting to watch, is just like May's legs, his playmaking ability, how much can that help this offense?
Yeah, over under rushing yards for Drake May is 31.5. The over under for rush attempts is 6.5. I could definitely see 7+ rushes for Drake May in this game. So I like that. But yeah, to me, I think that's going to be the biggest thing when we watch this Patriots offense is it's what can they control the line of scrimmage in the run game, but especially in the pass game. And I do think this is going to be a low scoring game. I think it will be pretty back and forth here. I don't see one side like truly running away from the other. So I don't think New England's going to be in a ton of just drop back scripts where Will Campbell's going to be singled up with Nick Benito. But at the same time, like Jared Wilson, the other rookie who's the left guard, he's struggled a lot this postseason as well. So like Jonathan Cooper, Zach Allen, Nick Benito. Those are the names to watch on the Denver Broncos defense going against this Patriots offensive line. But what do you think about the receivers versus some of the cornerbacks here? Because this is one of those easier defenses to study, Joel. They have a great number one corner in Patrick Surtain, and then they've got a slot in Jaquan McMillan. Riley Moss kind of can get picked on. And these Patriots wide receivers, a little bit difficult to predict week to week.
Yeah, totally. The last sentence there, definitely accurate. Diggs will be an interesting to watch because he's going to be on the inside half the time. He'll be a little bit more away from Surtain than a lot of other top receivers on teams. So that'll be interesting to Surtain. I could see them maybe using him in more of a unique way and following Diggs to the inside in the second half if he is getting some work early. But I wouldn't say at the start of the game that Surtain's going to be on him usually. So I'm guessing he's going to get a lot of booty on the outside, which he's had. Booty's had some success against some really good corners. We've seen it against Stingley. But I would say a large focus is going to be on Diggs on the inside. At least that's what I would expect in this game in the matchups.
Yeah, I will say I do have the over on Steph Diggs, 47.5 receiving yards. I'm going to bring that up later. But you do bring up a good point here about the like early first half stuff. The over-under for him in first quarter yards for Stephon Diggs is a mere 7.5. I actually kind of like that there because I think if we're thinking about it, I'm with you that Diggs hasn't played to the level this year where it's just he's playing like an elite number one. You're going to get that Patrick Surtain treatment. You know, he's going to follow him into the slot or anything. But as the game goes on, I could see that, you know, then he becomes a guy that you want to track around the field. And when we look at Kayshon Booty, he's probably going to get some routes against Riley Moss, who's a good corner but can be beat at times. I do think we're going to see most of the action with Steph Diggs against Jaquan McMillan in the slot. So definitely a favorable matchup there. It's just, can Drake May get the time in the pocket? And frankly, can he also hold on to the ball in the pocket? Because Drake May is awesome. I love Drake May, but he's had a little bit of a fumbling problem of late, if we're being honest.
Totally. What was the number? Do you remember in terms of not fumbles lost, but fumbles in total?
I mean, it was high. I don't remember off the top of my head. No, but it was pretty damn high.
Yeah, him and Stroud both. But yeah, that'd be a big one. Turnovers in this game could be huge, especially when you're talking about it being more low scoring defensive game. If you can have turnovers, maybe in the red zone, like we've seen, that could be a big part of this one.
All right, so let's get to our props here, and we'll pick this game. What do you got in this one, Joel?
The one that I think is a lot of fun, just kind of what I talked about earlier with Bo Nix and Sean Payton, would be Stidham over 31.5 passing attempts and over 19.5 completions. This is like Bo Nix leads the NFL in passing attempts per game, too, per game, with this defense. He has a top five defense in scoring and leading the NFL in passing attempts. So they can both get something going, but also just like extend this game. It's a close game, but they're projected, you know, to be 4.5-point losers, underdogs right here. So maybe we see Stidham throwing the ball a lot in this one. I wouldn't be shocked at all. We saw last week Bo Nix throw the ball a ton. In his four starts, he's gone over this number in all four, both completions and attempts. He's done it both games with Denver. So it'll be an interesting one with both Sean Payton, but then also Milton Williams back against this run defense. I think they'll need him too.
I like that. That makes a ton of sense to me. Did you mention you got one on Travion Henderson and RJ Harvey as well?
Yes. Got two more. So one is RJ Harvey. Kind of thinking that way too. Not his rushing yards. I'm not too confident in that. But the receiving yards. I was kind of surprised at this. He had 28 routes last week. So Bidet had 7. McLaughlin only had 4. In the games that Dobbins has missed, he's hit this mark in 6 out of the 8. I wouldn't expect Dobbins to play a ton if he does, and especially not in the passing game. So I don't think Stidham is like this huge downgrade for running back receiving. And I think more than usual, at least, they should use the running backs in this game for the receiving with these matchups on the outside. And they usually do. So I was kind of surprised that it was only at 17.5 for his receiving yards for Harvey. And then on the opposite side, going Henderson at over 34.5. I trust in Henderson. He only needs one play. We've seen that. But this offense in general, they're still giving him the ball. He had 12 attempts last week. It's just 2.5 yards per game these last two games. So the efficiency is not there. And yes, it's a good defense, but even though the road favorites against the Broncos, number one team, they are favorites. So I think Henderson still gets enough touches. And if he can just average like 3 yards a carry, he can get this and he can get it on one play with a number this low.
Yeah, that was the thing to me. I thought about some Travion Henderson unders, but it's just, one long run against a defense that does play aggressive sometimes. So if you get the right angles, you can rip off a long run. Makes you a little bit nervous there. But overall, I do like those four, especially the Stidham ones. I really like my four in this game. I'm going under on Kyle Williams, 7.5 yards at -118. Listen, it's a very low number, but my thinking here is that he's a pure perimeter player. I do think that Patrick Surtain's going to end up covering him a couple of times. Riley Moss is still a good cover corner. Also, Mac Hollins might be back in this game. I think he dressed for practice today, last I saw, so that would even take out some of his route share there. But for the most part, I think they're going with the three veterans, Kayshon Booty, DeMario Douglas, and Steph Diggs. Diggs, I think, over 47.5 receiving yards. I'll take the over there. And we did mention that 7.5 first quarter over. I kind of like that one even more now that I'm thinking about it. I'll go under on Ramondre Stevenson, 70.5 yards from scrimmage. That's rushing, receiving combined. I really just don't see a ton of rushing production for either backs in this game. And there's no props on a little Jordan Humphrey right now, so I can't give out any here, but I do kind of like him as the big slot in this game. If there's no Pat Bryant, if there's no Troy Franklin, so we don't know that for sure at this point. That's why there's no props up. But a size mismatch on the interior there with Marcus Jones as the main slot corner. You know, maybe an over like 2.5 catches or something. I could see that for a little Jordan Humphrey, but don't have one officially there. But Joel, let's pick this game before we toss to break. Who do you think wins, Patriots or Broncos?
The little Jordan one is fun. I like that. I am going to go with the Patriots to win. I think it is just maybe too much to overcome at this point of the season with having Stidham in there. The spread is tough. I'm not confident in it, but I would take 4.5 for the Patriots as well. I would say they'd to cover. But I think it is going to be like one of those low scoring close games like we talked about. So it'll just kind of come down to that fourth quarter and how it pans out.
I think I'm going to go Broncos. I'm going to take Broncos. I'll take the spread here as well. I think they're just the better team. I like, obviously the quarterback advantage goes to New England for sure, but you know, it's still Drake May's first postseason. He made a lot of mistakes last week, as we saw. And I just think the line of scrimmage, really on both sides of the ball, I think the line of scrimmage advantage goes to the Denver Broncos, but specifically their defensive line against the Patriots offensive line. I think that is going to be just a really tough matchup. So I keep picking against the Broncos. I'm not going to do it this time. I think they win the AFC championship, and we've got a Jarrett Stidham Super Bowl. What a time to be alive. All right, we're going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we're going to preview the NFC championship game right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to preview the conference championship games. We'll get to the NFC championship game in just a second, but two things to update here. Number one, of course, literally right as we go to break, I get a notification about Pat Bryant. Didn't clear concussion protocol, but he did fully practice. So if we can just go ahead and update my little Jordan Humphrey thoughts to being back to Pat Bryant, I'd actually feel even better about that because I think Pat Bryant's pretty good. Other thing to note here, we don't have to talk about this long, Joel, but just wanted because it happened during the show. Jesse Minter hired as the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. As I've said many times on the show, we're going to be doing a full coaches breakdown show with Nate Tice coming up soon in February. But any quick reaction to the Ravens hiring Jesse Minter, I think it's a pretty damn good get for them.
Yeah, don't mind it for them in terms of a good spot for them. I think it's interesting. My first thought was just the Harbaugh connection. They fired Harbaugh, and then they hire Harbaugh's brother's defensive coordinator. So that's got to be an awkward family conversation. But they kind of both lose in this one. Harbaugh loses his job. The other Harbaugh loses his defensive coordinator. So I don't mind the landing spot at all. It'll be interesting to see who lands up in L.A. for that defensive coordinator position.
Yeah, that is going to be interesting because that Chargers defense is really good. I think Jesse Minter has been awesome there, and it was a matter of time. I think the Chargers knew, I think they kind of knew ever since they hired Jesse that he was going to end up an NFL head coach. And he's also a guy who he's used to coach for the Ravens before he went to Michigan too. So it's kind of like we're moving on, but we're not really moving on type of hire for the Baltimore Ravens, which by the way is totally fine and defensible. Because Jesse Minter's good, and you got a good kind of culture and ecosystem there. You don't need to upset the apple cart too much. The big thing to note will be who is Jesse Minter going to be able to get to be his offensive coordinator for Lamar Jackson and those guys. But again, we'll update that more as we get going here with the coaches show later this month. But let's get back to our conference championship preview. And let's waste no time, Joel, because let's be honest, like this is the real Super Bowl this year. You know, that comes up like every couple of seasons where there's a conference championship game that looks potentially better than the Super Bowl matchup, which by me saying that means that an AFC team will win the Super Bowl. But these are two of the best teams in the NFL all season long. Rams traveling to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. The Seahawks are 2.5-point favorites, 47.5-point over under. I'm going to let you take dealer's choice on this one. Which team do you want to start with first when they have the ball?
Let's go Seattle. Let's go Seattle in terms of their passing attack will be interesting with Sam Darnold in this game. But yeah, like you said, whoever wins this game is going to be the Super Bowl favorite. So Seattle offense, what do you got for me?
Yeah, Seattle offense, I think kind of have to start with the obvious one here, which is when Sam Darnold is facing this Rams pass rush, you know, which is funny. I think we did a whole when we did the instant reaction show on Football 301. I think Nate Charles and I noted that we recapped and talked about that whole game and didn't even mention Sam Darnold's name once, the Seahawks 49ers game, because why would you? Like, Sam Darnold was kind of just a passenger in that game. This one, I think Sam Darnold is going to have to play a bit bigger of a role here, specifically with what he is going to face from a Rams defense perspective. When you look at the Rams defense, I think Chris Shula, another guy who could end up with a head coaching job in this cycle, specifically Pittsburgh, people have talked about that as a rather obvious fit. We'll see if that happens. But Chris Shula has done a good job with this unit. It's well designed. They use a lot of simulated pressures and kind of stunts and games up front, which that's the stuff that has given Sam Darnold some trouble, you know, where they simulate a blitz, but they actually don't blitz that much. They have the second lowest blitz rate in the NFL, but they lead the NFL in terms of 247 dropbacks with a stunt this year. The LA Rams defense, that's according to Fantasy Points data. Sam Darnold, when he faces stunts, he, out of 38 qualifying quarterbacks, ranks 26th with a 59% completion rate, 31st with a 71.3 passer rating, 29th with a 4.98 adjusted net yards per attempt, and this is with the ninth lowest pressure rate. So this is just something that when you can flash a guy in his face, you know, and on the back end, you've kind of got some of this confusing coverage stuff where you've simulated some pressure. He doesn't know where a guy is dropping. That's when you can get some rough moments from Sam Darnold. So that is a key matchup here that we need to watch with Darnold. And obviously, 2 touchdowns to 6 interceptions versus the Rams in the 2 games of the regular season.
Yeah. You're making me less confident on one of my props. I will say that. But in terms of more the negative side of Darnold, he has been pressured 45 times by the Rams in those 2 games. Jared Verse alone has 14 pressures against Sam Darnold. I would say the key to this game in my mind, or at least what I'll be looking for, is do they go back to that explosive passing attack and taking shots downfield? Seattle, they had the second highest rate on explosive passes. This is what we think kind of the Kubiak offense is. So what it was like with Derek Carr in New Orleans, he brought that over to Seattle. And early on in the season, that's what they were. It's why JSN was going berserk and kind of still did, you know, the whole season. But it randomly fell off. And I kind of didn't notice for a while until looking into it and now in the playoffs with the injury. But when we're looking at the shots downfield, the air yards of 20-plus, in the first 10 games, he was 5th in the percent of his throws going for 20-plus yards downfield. Since week 12, dead last in the NFL. So they're not even throwing downfield as much. And then last week with the injury, that plays into it a little bit too. And the Rams, that's like not their strength in terms of stopping the explosive pass plays. Seattle, it is. Their defense shuts those down. The Rams on the opposite side are 29th against the explosive pass plays. So can they take those shots downfield to JSN and whoever else, whether it's Shaheed or someone else deep downfield? I would be watching out for that.
Yeah, that's sort of where I'm not quite sure how I feel about the Sam Darnold spot in this game, because there's going to be some clear spots for him to, you know, make mistakes under pressure. I think there's just no doubt about that. That, you know, some of the stats I read off there, that's sort of what that's telling us. But I also kind of see it from that perspective too, where if you can get some protection, that Rams secondary is still vulnerable, specifically to those explosive passes as you highlighted. JSN, I think, will get his chances. He will be open here. So very excited to watch that. If Sam can just stand confidently in the pocket, that'd be great. One other thing about the Seahawks offense, though, Charles Cross, their starting left tackle, didn't participate in practice on Wednesday. He's got a foot injury that I think he ends up playing, but I don't think he's 100% at this point. Both of their backups didn't practice on Wednesday as well, Josh Jones and Amari Knight. And I know nobody wants to talk about this stuff, but like Zach Charbonnet is a great pass protecting back. He is obviously torn his ACL. He's going to be out for this game. To that point, Joel, I looked this up today. I never really look at the PFF like pass blocking grades, but every now and again, it's interesting to look at this. Kenneth Walker, who I imagine is going to have to play a ton of snaps here, he's the 10th worst PFF pass blocking grade among running backs with 40 pass block snaps this season. That's out of 48 guys. So he's 10th worst. So 39th out of 48 guys here. By the way, just interesting to note, some of the other guys in the bottom are like Amarian Hampton is so far the 48th out of 48. Travion Henderson, Ashton Jeanty. It is a lot of Kyle Manunga. It's a lot of rookies. It's like, why doesn't this guy play more? Well, usually because they can't pass protect back there. So even more kind of concerns in terms of the Seahawks being able to block up this Rams pass defense. But anything else you want to note on the Seahawks offense that could maybe paint a rosier picture than what I'm talking about here?
Mainly this Walker, like you're talking about in terms of his workload in general. He's projected his line right now, player prop, is at 20 and a half carries. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense. Whenever Charbonnet hasn't played, they do kind of go back to Walker being a bell cow. He's been amazing in the games where he has been that star guy. So it'll be interesting in this matchup, especially if those Seattle offensive linemen aren't playing. Hopefully Cross does. I think he will, like you said. But Walker will be a big part in this game. You wonder if they get him involved in the passing attack. But yeah, pass blocking, maybe not his strength fully there.
Rams do allow 4.99 yards per carry on outside zone runs this season. That's the fifth most in the NFL. And I obviously was invested in Kenneth Walker, maybe for the first time all season last week, because that was one of the props I got right. And would I have gotten it right without our buddy Zach Charbonnet unfortunately getting hurt? I don't know. But man, some of those outside zone runs against the Niners were just picture perfect teach tape. I mean, the offensive line was blocking great, especially off that left side there with Gray Zabel and Charles Cross and maybe some of the backups there as well. But Kenneth Walker was hitting the holes and he was getting the explosive plays. So I do think Walker has to show up big here. He's actually his two of his best games this season from a fantasy standpoint have come against the LA Rams. So I certainly think that Walker has to show up pretty big in this matchup for the Seahawks to kind of, keep Darnold out of chaos-based situations is kind of what I'm hoping for. Because I think if they do pass protect and they can kind of keep themselves in positive down and distance situations, I think that the Seahawks offense actually will have some success through the air. But I think Kenneth Walker has to be a big part of that as well. Let's flip it on to the other side here. What are you watching when the Rams have the football here?
I like looking at the offensive line and defensive line matchups right now, especially just in the run game. The Rams are top three in basically every run blocking stat. There's not many, but basically the number one run blocking team in the NFL this year. And Seattle on the opposite side is number one on the defensive front in terms of EPA allowed per run. So this will be an interesting one for their run game. They surprisingly just kind of had Corums in the back seat last week. He didn't really play much. So that was out of nowhere, it seemed like. Kyron Williams had 78% of those carries. That is the most since week five in terms of that backfield split. So it'll be interesting who they go to in this matchup, but either way, it's going to be a pretty tough one.
No, it really will. And it's another strength on strength matchup there from a defensive line versus offensive line perspective. I think Kevin Dodson returned last week and played pretty damn well in the divisional round. That was good to see. But the Rams are first in rushing success rate on running back runs this year, and the Seahawks are first in rushing success rate allowed. Like Leonard Williams, Byron Murphy, and those guys are two of the most kind of unsung heroes of the NFL season. Those guys have played great. They're great against the run. And I also think that they match up well because they defend in the passing game what the Rams want to do. We talked about this a little bit last week, Joel, and it weirdly did not come to fruition. I think some of it because of the weather, but also Sean McVay was kind of calling a bit of a bizarre game, and I think is kind of sneaky called two bizarre games back to back in the playoffs. But we expected the Rams to really attack the middle of the field against the Bears. And, you know, the Bears, to their credit, Dennis Allen had a great game plan. He sent a ton of like defensive back blitzes against the Rams, which maybe threw them off kilter, but they didn't really try to attack that middle of the field all that much. And that's why it didn't really turn into a very high scoring affair, kind of like we talked about last week. But Matthew Stafford so far in the playoffs, 124.3 passer rating, 79% completion rate inside the numbers on 43 pass attempts. When he throws outside the numbers in the playoffs these last two games, 35 attempts, 39.8 passer rating, 29% completion rate outside the numbers, and it's like they're trying to force it out there. Like some of the passes to Davante Adams are just not working right now. And the Seahawks, they have the third best success rate on throws between the numbers and the fourth best success rate on throws outside the numbers. So not really like a weak spot either way, but I do wonder if this trend of the Rams, almost like I said, trying to kind of force it outside the numbers, whether it's Stafford, whether it's McVay, I don't know, but that has been a bit of an issue for this team in the playoffs so far.
Yeah, they did kind of get away from their tight end attack too. So I'm sure that has correlated in terms of just the formations they were out in the field or the personnel. They went from a ton of 13 at the end of the regular season without Adams. And then these last two games barely really used it, even with Ferguson back last week. So that'll be an interesting one. In Seattle, just those explosive plays against receivers on the outside, specifically their number one. So Seattle, obviously their pass defense is amazing in a bunch of aspects, but number one against that on the outside. So it's interesting. We saw Puka destroy this team last time. And we're saying like, we're hyping up the Seattle passing defense. The last time they played, Stafford did have 460 yards.
Yeah.
So that was without Davante Adams too. So Puka, I think they give him a lot of attention in this one. Like he had those explosives against them. So they are number one versus the explosives to the receivers, even though they allowed 180 yards on four catches just on the explosive plays alone to Puka Nacua the last time they played.
Oh, man, it was a crazy game from Puka Nacua. And yeah, I do wonder if they try to – they play a ton of zone coverage, right? Both teams actually are really high in terms of zone coverage rate, so I think we'll see a lot of that. But they play a lot of zone coverage, and they're so good at taking away those throws over the middle of the field because Witherspoon is incredible. Their linebackers are really good in coverage, are the Seattle Seahawks. So I wonder if the openings will be to Davante Adams on the outside there, especially if they do, like you said, give that extra attention to Puka. But man, it's been a struggle for Adams since he came back from injury, and I'm sure most of it is due to health. But give me your props for this game, Joel, and then I'll give mine and we'll pick it.
We're going the positive route for the most part here in terms of Adams and Darnold, even though we're kind of talking about how it's tougher matchups overall. But let's start with Blake Corum. Actually, an under 10.5 on his longest run. We talked about how that split last week was kind of non-existent. 22% of his carries last week, and then 40% basically since that week five mark. So he was almost 50-50 and then barely touched the ball last week. We talked about how good this Seattle run D is. He's missed this in four of his last five games. Both of the game versus Seattle, he missed this. So it's one of those where it's like, I don't know how many carries he's going to have in this game. Does he break one for over 10 yards out of his seven carries, six carries, whatever it is? I don't have too much faith there. Adams in that same offense, I do think they rely on Stafford a lot in this game. Kind of like we saw last time. I know that one went into overtime, but it was without Davante Adams. I think a lot of the focus is going to be on Puka Nacua. He still played a lot and getting the target share. Production hasn't been there. And like you said, like maybe they're trying to force him the ball, but he didn't really have a big target share during the season, actually. I know we kind of think about Davante Adams as like that 30% target share guy. In the season, it was 19%. In the playoffs so far, it's been at 23%. He had eight targets for famously 1 yard against Seattle last time. I think he bounces back a little bit in this one when Stafford has that huge game in the second time. A third matchup for this game, you see how Sean McVay, I think he'll get creative here. Lots of film on this team from the first two times they played. So I have faith in Adams at a low number of 49.5 receiving yards. And then the last one, Sam Darnold. This is more so of a, I think the volume is going to be there. I'm not as confident in this one anymore because of what you said. I'm kind of starting to backtrack a little, but maybe if those offensive line, the health there, hopefully that is there. So maybe more of an injury-dependent one. but he's played the Rams twice this year. He had 279 passing yards and 270 passing yards, but the key is he had 44 passing attempts in that overtime game and 34 attempts in the other one. When they're in these closer matchups, he's averaging 32 attempts per game. When it's not close, they're winning or losing by a touchdown or more, 24 per game. So the volume just isn't really there in a lot of these big blowouts and just how this offense is designed. But he's still second in yards per attempt to Drake May this year. And two of his top three games in terms of passing attempts are against this Rams team. So I think he's still set up for a really big volume day. And if you give Sam Darnold volume, I think we'll get over 237. Like, that's still a pretty low number. And we talked about this passing defense for the Rams not being like the greatest in the world.
Yeah, and I think that there's every chance that this game could turn into a really high-scoring affair as it did the last time we saw these two teams play on Thursday night, even if Sam Darnold does make some of those mistakes. A big saving grace, too, is that, you know, I mentioned the backup left tackle. We talked about that a lot. Jared Verse has not really shown up big in the playoffs for this Rams team, despite the fact that he's gone up against backup left tackles in back-to-back games. You know, Ike Ekwonu had the patella tendon tear in the Panthers game, so backup left tackle most of that game with Josh Nyman in there. Joe Tooney shifted out to left tackle for the Bears last week, and still it wasn't like Verse taking over games here. So hopefully that can be enough for Sam Darnold to have some time in the pocket. My three props here for this week: I'm going over on 28.5 receiving yards for Cooper Kupp, -118. I would love to take the catches, but it's over 2.5 at -145. I mean, come on, what's the point? I'm not gonna tell you guys bet some of those -145. Give me a break. But Cooper Kupp over 28.5 receiving yards here. I do think he can have a nice game against a very zone coverage heavy team. I think it's telling that they relied on him in a big game last week. I think we'll see a good bit of Cooper Kupp. He has a nice outing here for that one. I'm going under on Kyren Williams 54.5 rushing yards here. I think the Seahawks run defense is just as awesome as the Rams ground game is. I think the Seahawks run game is better, particularly on the interior. And then just kind of on the same line as you here in terms of a lot of passing volume, I think Stafford over 35.5 pass attempts on this one. If they're not going to run the ball a ton, I think they'll try to get the ball out quick, take a few shots, but I think it might be more of like a move the ball, matriculate it, steady, efficient type of approach here for the Rams in the passing game. Let's get to the picks here, and I'll just lead us off here, Joel. I'm going to take the Seahawks in this one. We haven't brought this up here yet, but there's a huge special teams mismatch on this one as well. The Rams special teams have been a huge problem all season, and the Seahawks are really good as a special teams unit. Rashid Shaheed, you know, never really popped up as a receiver much consistently this year. He's been awesome for this team as a return man this year, including last week. So for that reason, for the fact I think the Seahawks have just been the best team in the NFL this year, their offense is good enough, their defense is incredible, I think they win this game. Are you on the Seahawks or the Rams here for the NFC Championship?
I will agree with you this time. Just watching Seattle last week, it's hard to say, like, I think the Rams are going to win this one. It's going to be close, I think. I think the spread is right, like 2.5 points. But, man, they destroyed the 49ers last week, as they should, but 41 points. So I don't think it's going to be like that, but they look good. I think if Darnold can just be healthy in this game, it'll be enough to take this defense to the Super Bowl as well.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I've got a Broncos Seahawks Super Bowl. You've got a Patriots Seahawks Super Bowl. Not what anybody was predicting before the year. And yeah, sorry about it, folks. This isn't about quarterbacks. It's about football teams. Broncos Seahawks is a great Super Bowl. Hate to say it, just because it's you know, Sam Darnold versus Jarrett Stidham. I don't want to hear none of that. Oh, Sam Darnold versus Jarrett Stidham. No, it's two great teams that will be facing off in the Super Bowl, or it could end up being Drake May versus Matthew Stafford, and then it's the two MVP candidates, which for Joel, you know, for Joel, I think it's great either way. I think it's good for the sport no matter what.
Yeah, I would love. I feel like there's lots of fun scenarios in terms of who's matching up with who. Obviously, the Broncos make it. Jarrett Stidham is going to be the story. That's insane. But the MVP quarterbacks, like you said, Seattle with that defense, getting to the Super Bowl, making it back. Maybe that's Seattle Patriots, if I'm right. Maybe that rematch from a while ago in that big Super Bowl game.
Two rematches. The Broncos Seahawks would be also a rematch, you know, before that, you know. So I think those were back-to-back seasons for the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. So everything's turning up Seahawks here for us on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. We are going to take our final break. We come back. Joel has his top five free agent landing spots for us. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We previewed the conference championship games, but now it's time to get into a little preview of a different variety, and that is Joel's free agency preview. Joel, you've been writing some pieces for the website here, I think previewing every position upcoming for free agency. And, you know, I have decided I'm ready to make this announcement here today. We are reading again in 2026. We were reading again in 2025. We're still reading in 2026. So the people out there do need to make sure that they check out your full write-ups on the website. But you have the top five fantasy free agents here and their best fits. Let's go 5-1 and talk through these players and where you might like to see or might predict that they land. Get me with number five here on the list.
Big name at number five in the fantasy community. We're going to go Kyle Pitts. The one tight end on this list, probably the biggest tight end in the free agency market right now. But I want him to stay in Atlanta, honestly, just for his hope. We saw at the end of the year, the last six games, part of it was the quarterback change. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be next year in Atlanta. But 51 targets in those last six games came on, even with Drake London back, was still getting the volume there. But I do really like Stefanski coming in. That's a lot of times the questions of the offseason is the coaching changes. I like Zach Robinson for this Atlanta offense and like him for Tampa Bay. Shout out there. But Stefanski coming in, obviously, Harold Fannin Jr. was the tight end six as a rookie this year in half PPR right behind Pitts. The 3 years before that, the Browns have had a tight end one in fantasy four straight seasons. Pitts, I think it's a really good fit with Stefanski here. And they still get the offensive coordinator that Cleveland had too in Tommy Rees.
Yeah, two things. Number one, I mean, what a graphic. You and Kyle Pitts look great on this graphic that we've got here on YouTube. If you're listening on the audio, you got to check out here us on YouTube. This is great. The graphic is awesome. Number two, though, I'm with you that this is good for Kyle Pitts if he goes back to Atlanta. I think the offense fits him well. I think Stefanski with the move tight end stuff will be really good. I'm very fascinated, and this is, we don't have to get into this now because got a lot of time to pull this thread. I'm very interested to see like how Drake London is deployed in this offense because he was deployed in a great way with Zach Robinson off that Rams tree. This is a little bit of a different system. Drake London's awesome. It won't matter, but it might matter a little bit on the margins, but it'll be fascinating to see like how Pitts and London interact together because they never quite could pop off together for this Falcons team under the previous offense. So that will definitely be something to watch there, but it would be good for Pitts to go back to Atlanta. Hit me with your fourth player, a player and the team fit potentially in free agency.
Going to go Travis Etienne Jr. here. An interesting one. I feel like most of the talk is he is not going to return to Jacksonville. Just want to say, think Jacksonville would be great for him, just from what we saw this year with Liam Cohen in particular. But if he doesn't return, I wouldn't mind him suiting up for the Saints next season with Kellen Moore. Really good offense coach for fantasy running backs there. Really interesting one, actually. In terms of production, the Saints were 32nd this year in the Saints running backs production compared to every other team. 2 years ago, in the Chargers in 2023, Kellen Moore was also dead last with an aging Austin Eckler in that Chargers offense. The reason I say it's still good is because the other three seasons besides that, in these last five, they've been number five in fantasy running back points, second in running back points, and seventh in those Kellen Moore offenses. We think the Cowboys back in the day with Tony Pollard, Ezekiel Elliott, and then obviously Saquon last season was the number one guy. So if we can get Travis Etienne in this offense, it's high pace. With Shuck in this offense, 13th in total offense. So I would say that's impressive. I don't think it's going to be a bad offense at all next year. So I think it's a really good spot for him where he's been RB7 and then RB39 and RB12 this year in points per game for those PPR leagues. So like the receiving options here in terms of going to him in this Kellen Moore spot, but also just in general, I like this offense for him.
I like it. I like this a lot. 83 attempts at outside zone last year, which was really good for Travis Etienne with Liam Cohen and the Jacksonville Jaguars of New Orleans Saints. 83 attempts. Obviously, the success wasn't there. Their backs were not very good last year. I do think a running back like Travis Etienne would fit pretty well in this offense. We're going to stay at the running back position for your third ranked player here.
Yeah, we've already talked to him today. It is going to be Kenneth Walker. An interesting one just because of the Charbonnet injury. I would say, next year in redraft, it'd be better, I would say, if he, you know, Charbonnet missing time, obviously he's better in redraft. For dynasty purposes, it might be a negative that Charbonnet got hurt because it could mean that he goes back to Seattle, which don't know, but I'm guessing Kubiak won't be there. McDonald's probably will be, obviously. So we'll see what happens in Seattle there. But if he doesn't go back to Seattle, Houston and Washington, I would say, are two to watch there. Houston, the volume is there. They don't have some other key pieces like the offensive line, but the volume. We've seen guys like Woody Marks this year get 20 touches, mainly on the ground. But if he's getting 20 carries in an offense, I think that helps him a lot in terms of his playmaking and ability there to break one. Washington, I really like this. Just the scoring offense in general, if it comes back with Jaden Daniels, a healthy Jaden Daniels, and just kind of opening up those lanes. Like we see, Baltimore was more middle of the road in terms of their offensive line this year. But in terms of their yards before contact, they were number one because of Lamar Jackson. So even if that threat to run that Jaden Daniels brings kind of opens up a little more holes, and if you can give Kenneth Walker space to break those, I really like it there in an offense that would be better than average, I think, still with Jaden Daniels back.
Yeah, I like either of these two fits here. I wonder if the Seahawks, whether the Charbonnet injury will change their mind about bringing Kenneth Walker back, because I think they like him. I just don't think they love him. You know, they have plenty of cap space. They have more cap space than they probably need. But still, you think maybe they want to re-roll in the draft for a running back that they've selected in terms of the coaching staff. But yeah, I love either one of these spots here. Texans, Commanders, these are two teams that I think should and could make big swings at running back. And they're two teams that definitely need some juice at the running back position. With Kenneth Walker, for all of his flaws, he brings the juice. All right, let's get to your number two player here.
We're going to have a little convo here about just receivers in general. The only like two big time names is George Pickens, which we're expecting to go back to Dallas, hopefully, and Mike Evans, which kind of same thing, that veteran, probably going to retire as a Buck, most likely will re-sign there. Pickens, obviously, we want him in Dallas. He was the wide receiver 4 this season, even with CeeDee Lamb, wide receiver 7. So there wasn't like that big of a drop off, even though Lamb, when he was out, Pickens was incredible. Still the wide receiver 7 when CeeDee Lamb was healthy. So that connection with Dak is there. But a lot of the things I like to talk about in the offseason is just the changes or lack thereof. And for receiver, if you have the same play caller, the same offense, same quarterback, same weapons around you, that's good if you're already good, which is what Pickens is. So like it there for him, but it'll be interesting to see where guys like Alec Pierce, Wandale Robinson, Christian Kirk, Shaheed maybe. Do you have any like that you like there in terms of maybe potential fits down the line?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot. I think it's going to be a rather sizable offseason for receiver movement. I think there's a lot of trade candidates. I think there's a lot of potential cut candidates as well. You know, a guy like Brandon Ayuk, obviously he's going to get cut. I don't know who wants to take on the Brandon Ayuk situation and some of just the weirdness there, but he's a big name that will be available. Is BTJ available for a trade? I think he could be. And Alec Pierce, one thing I just wanted to mention with him, I think because I'm with you, Pickens, he'll go back to Dallas. I think Evans doesn't, if he could retire, but if he plays again, I think he plays for the Bucs. So Pierce, probably the number one guy on the market. I do wonder if he's actually going to end up going from underrated to overrated a little bit, because great player, but still has some flaws in his game and maybe not a complete number one receiver. Very interested to see his contract. But Joel, I've actually been thinking about this. I think there's a pretty good chance that Michael Pittman actually ends up getting released or traded by the Colts, and they use those salary savings to bring back Pierce, which would be interesting for a guy like Josh Downs, who I think could play the flanker position if Pittman moves on, and it would relieve them really shallow at receiver with basically just Pierce and Downs in that situation, because they traded A.D. Mitchell. Ashton Doolin's a nice player, but more of a rotational guy. So I do think it's going to be kind of a big offseason for receiver movement. And I think Pierce right now projects to be the number one available free agent receiver, because, yeah, I'm with you. Pickens is not getting out of Dallas. He will get franchise tag or extended, period, end of story.
Yeah, I feel like Pierce is really good at what he does, but I don't know if I'd fully expect him to like grow into being a wide receiver 1 on a team. If Pittman were to move on, I think it does help Downs a lot, but also Tyler Warren on the inside. Like if he gets a volume bump, just more of a focus in year 2, that would be awesome for him.
And a lot of teams could use Michael Pittman as well, so that would be an interesting player if he gets loose or traded, anything like that. All right, your number one free agent and his potential fit, who is it?
Oh, you know who it is, and you know the landing spot as well. It's going to be Breece Hall, the landing spot that everyone wants in fantasy, the Kansas City Chiefs. Breece Hall, he deserves some good luck. He has not had it throughout his career. He's been so good. One of my favorite players. He has 13 goal line attempts in the last 3 seasons. And it's not because he's not the goal line back. It's because the Jets are never there. So if he moves to an offense that's like New York, where he's been an RB1, but this year, you know, still an RB2, to a Kansas City Chiefs offense, which I really like the moves they made in terms of their coaching. Moving on from Matt Nagy, going back to Eric Bieniemy. Even with Mahomes coming off the ACL, great spot for him. He's guys like Kareem Hunt recently, Isaiah Pacheco, CH, all top 20 running backs in fantasy. If you get a guy like Breece Hall in there who's actually taking the volume and the talent that they got there in the offense, be beautiful. Andy Reid, in his career, it's been a long one, but there's been 10 seasons where he has a running back score 18 points per game. That's a lot. So it could be a top five running back season for Breece Hall if he lands in the spot and kind of has that bell cow workload.
Look, I love it. I think it'd be awesome. I think it should have happened last year. I especially like Breece Hall fitting with Eric Bieniemy, who's a great running back coach. You know, maybe he has his flaws as a offensive, like a play calling offensive coordinator. Great running back coach. I think it'd be great if it happens. You know what makes me nervous though, Joel? The Jets have $66 million in cap space, and the running back franchise tag is gonna be like $14 million bucks, dude. I kind of think that the Jets might just say, "Okay, Breece, you want to play somewhere else? Too bad." The franchise tag exists, and I kind of think they slap the tag on him, which I know that's a really negative way for me to end the show, but I'm kind of thinking that's what ends up happening.
Yeah, you know what they say. When you are rebuilding, you got to start by paying a ton of money to running backs, and that's how you do it.
That always works. Yeah, it always works out that way. That's perfect. All right, Joel, hell of a show, buddy. Appreciate you doing this as always. Like I mentioned, people should definitely check out not just your work on the Yahoo site. You've got the free agency piece up there, but what else are you working on right now that people can check out?
Yeah, lots of articles, but videos will be back soon. Some more YouTube coming back, getting back on the TikTok social videos. So especially with free agency coming up, the draft coming up, doing lots of that as well as, you know, the prep for August is a big part of my time.
No doubt. I'm really excited to see what you produce for free agency and especially draft. Really excited to talk prospects with you. But that is going to do it for us today. We are going to be back on Monday. As always, Scott Pienowski joins me to recap the conference championship games. That is going to be live right here on this YouTube channel at 11 a.m. Eastern. Until then, we are out.